Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, deputy features editor at Billboard and Broadway fan in charge here. So earlier this year, I was really excited when I heard that there was going to be a new production off Broadway of the show Smokey Joe's Cafe. I actually grew up listening to the album of this show, but I realized that I had no idea what it would be like on stage. I had only ever heard it. So the score is this sort of cornucopia of pop music by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. If you know pop music history, you know the duo of Lieber and Stoller. They are one of the most famous songwriting teams ever. They wrote hit after hit after hit through the 1950s, 60s, and 70s for the likes of Elvis Presley, the Coasters, the Drifters, and Benny King. Hound Dog, Stand By Me, Love Me, Charlie Brown, Spanish Harlem, they're all by Lieber and Stoller. All in all, they wrote over 70 chart hits, and they've been inducted into both the Songwriters and Rock and Roll Halls of Fame. All of those songs, and many, many more, are in Smokey Joe's Cafe, which actually won a Grammy Award back in the 90s for its original cast recording. But this is not a jukebox musical. It's what's known as a musical review. So that means that while, yes, the score is entirely comprised of music written by a particular artist or songwriter, there's no plot that has been concocted to connect the songs or to give them a reason for existing on stage. In Smokey Joe's Cafe, you're really just watching talented performers sing great songs and dance for about 90 minutes straight. I wasn't sure what to expect from this show. I was aware of other musical reviews that are considered excellent, including a few with Stephen Sondheim's music, and more recently, a really great one is Jason Robert Brown's Songs for a New World. But I have never seen one on stage, and I have to admit, I was worried I would find it kind of boring with no real plot. But when I walked out of Smokey Joe's Cafe with my friend who had come with me, we were both like smiling from ear to ear and repeatedly saying to each other, "That was the most delightful thing ever. It was so great. It was so delightful." There was something really amazing about just letting these songs speak on their own. And that's an idea that I enjoyed exploring with my guests this week, current Smokey Joe's Cafe cast members Alicia Umfriss and Dwayne Cooper, and the show's director and choreographer Joshua Burgos. I have to say, because I like giving a shout out to the dearly departed show Smash on this podcast as much as I can, Josh actually did most of the choreography on Smash. So these are all artists who, in one way or another in their careers, have acted or been involved in big Broadway musicals, but they all agreed that there is something different and really valuable to musical theater in a show like Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast.
Well done. now that that's over, who are you people sitting here with me?
I'm Josh Burgos, and I'm the director choreographer of Smokey Joe's Cafe.
I'm Dwayne Cooper. I'm one of the cast members of Smokey Joe's Cafe.
And I'm Alicia Umfris. I'm also one of the cast members of Smokey Joe's Cafe.
This is like the first show I've had on the podcast where you don't have an actual character name. You are a person who sings in the show.
Technically, our character names are our names. Mm-hmm. So I play Alicia, a role I was born to play.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, and I play Dwayne. You know, for those who are familiar with the show, they probably recognize me as the bass. Yeah.
Or just familiar with your voice right now.
Oh, my voice right now.
Well, this is a show that I, as with many people, I think go back with. I remember like my mom playing the soundtrack in the car, like when I was growing up. And these are certainly songs that I think have deep, deep resonance for a lot of people, judging only by all of the sounds in the audience the night that I was there, which I want to hear your reactions to later. But, you know, as theater people, like, what is the reputation of this show? What it was sort of your personal histories with it, coming to it?
Well, I actually knew the soundtrack, the cast recording, original cast recording, and I had seen the DVD that they made. But I never saw the show live, and you know, it blew me away when I saw the DVD. And then I also choreographed a couple of regional productions, so I got to know the show pretty well, got to know the material of that original production pretty well.
And I hadn't moved to New York yet when it was performing, you know, the show. And my mom actually used to date one of the Drifters.
What?
Yes.
What?
Bill Pinkney, yeah. And so that's how I got my start. I always wanted to be a part of it because the music was always a part of my DNA of sorts.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Up. Yeah.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's also how I got my equity card doing Smokey Joe's.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't really have any. I had seen the DVD, and I obviously, growing up as a musical theater nerd child, I had the cast recording. So I had listened to that a lot, but maybe I'd seen it regionally, but I had never done it. I think I did Woman in a Recital once in college.
It was also one of those great shows where they feature so many African-American people. Mm-hmm. It was like a rite of passage for me to be a part of it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's incredible in that way for sure. And I was thinking of like these two, well, I now think of them as old white guys, but they like wrote so much amazing music for black singers like over so many years. Like, that's a huge part of their canon for sure. When I left the show with my friend, we were like, that was just like 90 minutes of pure delightfulness. Like, it's just 90 minutes of great music, great performances. And I realized that the idea of a musical review is not something that we see super frequently on Broadway or close to Broadway anymore. Is this show kind of a trailblazer in that way, or is it part of kind of a lineage of shows like this?
Well, it's funny because they say, you know, it's kind of like the original jukebox musical. But instead of trying to shoehorn these songs into positions that had to tell a story or give a character arc, they just did it as a review, which that way you can just appreciate the songs for what they are. And I think it works better that way.
Yeah, because you're not trying to create a plot around pre-existing songs that maybe don't have a very dramatic narrative, you know, right. Like, or they just are standalone.
Right.
So it almost, I think there are few that sort of really succeed in propelling the story further because they weren't written for that purpose. And in this, it's just kind of like, every song is its own story.
You're able to just enjoy the numbers, enjoy the songs, and not expect more out of them. Expect, well, what does this mean? Why, this doesn't really make sense here. There's no rules about it.
Right.
Yeah, it's almost like a book of short stories, and it's 40 short stories. So every song is its own little journey and adventure and story, and I think it's great.
That's such a great way to describe it, because what occurred to me was, I actually think this is very different from a jukebox musical, so to speak, and I think that the songs and the actors in a way seem to have to do a lot more work because of that. Like, you don't have a narrative that's kind of carrying you along. And short stories is such a great analogy because they're each like a little drama. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if as actors, that's like an extra challenge to you or very different from what you would have to accomplish if you were in like a traditional narrative musical.
I do find it to be a challenge, but a fun challenge, you know, because each song is different. You know, the idea of having everyone in a neighborhood together to showcase those songs is great, but it's nice to have your own take of what the song means for you. You know, and I think people really gravitate to that expression of what you're trying to convey in the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think especially what Josh has done so brilliantly in this version is, you know, we've really done things differently than in the original. And songs are assigned not necessarily to, oh, you're playing the Dilly track or you're playing the Ken track.
Right.
It's like we're playing the Alicia track. And so I'm not doing exactly what they did in the original. It's like a new sort of palette. And I think that we've been able to sort of take songs in way different directions. And so certain times people will be expecting one thing and then it's like completely different from what they want, which is the true sense of a revival. I think, why do a revival unless you're going to make it fresh and interesting and different and now?
Well, you know, part of that came out of almost necessity because the original production was so good. And the people in it were so good, and it was built on them. The whole thing was structured on them. And it would be silly to try and cast carbon copies of them because you'll never get that.
Yeah.
They were so singular. Mm-hmm. So our you know, mission was to find spectacular talent and figure out how do we create this show on them and how do we show them off? Literally, how do we exploit their talents? that's what our goal was. And so that's how the show kind of shaped on you guys.
What were the parts of the original production that you wanted to kind of preserve, and where did you see, besides with the casting, where did you see opportunities to give this like a different and sort of more 2018 vibe?
Well, you know, we wanted to, it's funny, in the casting, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had people who could dance, but we weren't totally married to that. We were thinking, well, if this person who normally would dance, maybe it's not a dance track. Maybe a different track is a dance track. Or so we weren't really trying to preserve anything as much as we were just trying to discover the people and discover what we could do with them.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And I know our music director is not here, Sonny Palladino. He did a brilliant job at taking those songs and making them fresh for a current generation. You know, like we do an a cappella version of Loving You. You know, it's a doo-wop style, but our take on it is it's fresh, and because we're all youthful looking, I think that helps in trying to convey the spirit of the music. You know, also, Love Potion number 9, it's such a fun, high energy song. You know, it's a, in my opinion, a Tito Puente kind of take on the older version of it. That's just really fresh and just fun to perform. You know, and I think people really feel that energy when we're performing it.
A lot of the, in what you, it's funny, a lot of the versions that we did in this song, in this show, are versions. We went back to the original versions. So actually, it was actually the Drifters did, I think the Drifters did do a version of that with the bomb, bomb.
Yeah, the Coasters.
Yeah, the Coasters, yes, yeah, sorry, yeah, the Coasters. Yeah. Yeah.
So, it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we kind of went back to a lot of songs. We would go back and listen to the original. And I think it changed in the 1995 Broadway version. Mm-hmm. And I think we decided to go back to the sound, the original sound of some of that, so the heavy guitar and the kind of grainy saxophone. Mm-hmm.
It's really rich. It also has that Santana feel that people gravitate towards.
Oh, yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like now I need to re-listen to it.
Well, I'll do it right now.
Let's get up. Let's show it.
Well,
now is a perfect time to talk about the music itself and Lieber and Stoller. It occurs to me that you don't often, even in the jukebox musical world, hear like somebody's entire catalog in a show to the extent that you do in this one. It's just like, even if you know their music going into it, I was still sitting there being like, oh yeah, they wrote this too. Like, seriously, they also wrote this? It's crazy. So I would love to hear just from each of your perspectives, like, what is it about their music that defines it? And what about it you think made these songs such hits that like everybody still knows immediately?
Okay, I'll start.
You look like you were taking a breath. Like you were gonna start.
I will start. The thing that, I mean, the lyrics feel timeless. You know, you think about songs like Stand By Me, you know, the message of having support and love of other people, you know, it's that transcends time, you know, and yeah, first and foremost, I mean, I'll probably have more ideas after that, but that's what I feel firstly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they just knew how to write hits too, and hits sort of withstand the test of time. I mean, it's exactly like you said, when you're watching the show, and that's not even their whole catalog. I remember kind of looking, you know, what is their whole, you know, I looked at their Wikipedia or some page, and there were so many songs on there that I still had never heard of or, you know, weren't included in the show. And, you know, for our version, we've cut it to 90 minutes. And so we've added a couple songs that weren't in the original Broadway production and obviously taken some away. And it's still like you still get so much impact from what we, I mean, there's 40 songs in it. Yeah. I mean, it's just so nuts.
And this music has obviously brought people together. You know, when we look out into the audience, we see white, black, Hispanic, like different ages. It's like the music is a testament of that, you know, and many people today are influenced by this genre of music. You know,
I think also it's great to be in the audience repeatedly because I see so many different audiences and I watch them react. So sometimes when we have a younger audience, they're very vocal but they know these songs because these songs aren't just like of a generation. They're of many generations because they've been recycled through decades. So they know the songs. And even if they don't know the songs, they appreciate the performances of them enthusiastically. But then I'll sit and, you know, say the next audience I see is an older on average audience. But they like it. They're having the best time. They're just not as vocal. But, you know, sometimes every once in a while you see an older couple grab hands during a song, depending on, you know. Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It's wonderful. You know, and they just love it. And then at the end, you see how much they really appreciate the show. They're just the way they show their appreciation during the show is different. But it's just proof of how many generations of people can enjoy this music and enjoy these performances and, you know, really, really appreciate the songs.
It feels like the kind of show where you're like allowed to make noise in the audience, which is like really nice.
Yeah.
There were the night that I was there. There were these three women, who one much older and two who I may assume maybe were her daughters, in the like very front row on the right, and she was like waving her arms during like every song and like whooping. And I was like, this woman is like really living her life right now. And I ran into her in the bathroom afterwards, and I was like, thank you. Watching you was almost as much as fun as watching the show. And she was like, it's my birthday. it was nice to see that kind of like palpable joy that it gives people. I mean, also on a basic level, I think beyond the sort of the universal themes that everybody is into, like I think it's worth mentioning that the two of them come from this era of like classic pop music and this whole Brill Building world that in a way I think is kind of the template for how pop music works today, with certain songwriters writing for all the big artists. And it's funny to think of that basically the same thing is happening today, even if people are like in Sweden and
not all in one place
in New York. But I mean, like all the songs, I would think, especially from a choreographer's perspective, Josh, that they all have like a good beat. That's a really kind of circular sense of melody that is what gets them in your head.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they really bring, you know, they were meant to bring people onto the dance floor, I think, when they were originally written. And so the songs, you know, not only are they so much fun to choreograph, but they almost choreograph themselves in a way. You know, something like on Broadway, it's like, you know, you just can't help but to move, and you just, you know, you just start jumping around and pick your favorite moves, and then you kind of stitch it together.
You have to snap. It's required.
Right. You know, they're really, really wonderful songs to dance to.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, they're also, as we kind of touched on, a lot of them are very associated with specific artists, whether it's the Coasters or Elvis or what have you. So I was curious about, for both of your preparation process, how much of it was about studying these old recordings and thinking about the way the artist did them versus kind of focusing more just on like the lyrics and like your own different kind of performance?
I mean, I know for me, I sort of took my solo numbers and there were a few references that, you know, I keep forgetting was sort of more like the original, which was really like 70s sound. It was just like, I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. Like really kind of cool and not
slower
like,
groove.
Like not like the one in the original. So I listened to that and sort of, I think that it just sort of helped inform what we ended up doing. I don't think it was sort of a copy of that, but I focused more on that. And then I think for Pearl's a Singer, we really went away from the one in the original, which kind of goes off at the end, and made it a very sort of simple, sad country song. And we actually looked at a Bernadette Peters version, or she does it on some TV show in the 70s. Yeah. Or eight, and it's really, it's like really long, really emotional, and it's like she sings the song through three times, I think. I mean, but it takes you on a journey, and so I think we modeled a little bit more off of that rather than the original or the original Broadway.
You know, Mike, when we were, I think it was a couple of years ago when we were doing one of the first labs, and he said, Mike Stoller, he said, you know, I never meant for that song to sound like that. Speaking of Pearl, he never, you know, and that was the version that they did in the original Broadway was very similar to the one they did, the original pop version that was recorded. And he said, you know, he always said, it's supposed to be a sad song. I never meant for them to kind of like go crazy at the end. And they recorded it that way. And I don't think he ever liked it.
Yeah.
And so I just thought about that. And so, you know, with Sonny, our music director, and that's when we just started thinking, well, you know, he's right. And it, and now it's like a really, really emotional moment in our show because we did the song the way he originally intended.
Totally. No, I can imagine like Dolly Parton singing it or something.
Oh, yeah. She would love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I did my homeworks. You know, I studied, you know, Fred Owens, who was the original Fred, the bass, in Smokey Joe's, as well as Ronnie Bright, who was one of the singers of the Coasters. And it wasn't until I really started looking at old footage of Ronnie Bright that I felt like, okay, this is meant for me. This is the next journey for me. Because I, for better or for worse, never felt like I was physically right for this particular role, you know, and it's not about the physical aspect of it. It's more about the singing, you know, but so I was able to do that and add on my own little personality, which folks of you can't see me right now, but when you see the show, you will see it.
There's a lot of personality.
There's a lot of personality. So, but I wanted to, you know, not stray too far away from the actual bass vocal. You know, I wanted to really honor that sound. And Sonny, our music director, has allowed me to play more and we have new songs. And so it's just really wonderful to have that support, you know, of the team.
I was going to say, more than most people in the show, you have this kind of iconic role almost to live up to. Which is like the bass, you're like the bass guy in the song, which always has the guy who pipes up with like the...
Yeah, he's always way down here the whole time.
I think it physically, you are great for the role because you're like this lanky guy and then this voice comes out of
you. Thank you. I've been trying to get that all my life, you know, at auditions, you know, but Old Man River never could do that. So,
you're a unicorn. Yeah. Dwayne, there's no one like you. Yeah.
I will happily listen to your Old Man River anytime. I mean, something else that struck me listening to the songs is it feels like there is a bit of a,
you can trace kind of an evolution in the complexity of their songwriting too over the course of the show. Like, there's some of the stuff that just sounds like what I would now think of as kind of like cookie cutter 1950s pop, which probably they were the template for everybody else. And then a song like Spanish Harlem that I think has like a lot more layers to it and is maybe a lot more unusual sounding. I was just curious if that's something that you've thought about or that you see.
Well, that's one of the brilliant things about the show itself is that's the way it's structured. It's structured, you know, like you start out in the neighborhood, you know, young and in love or falling in love. And throughout the show, you know, you have these experiences. And then by the end, you come back to the neighborhood a little older and a little wiser. So it's kind of the way the show is structured from number to number helps give you this journey, even though you don't really realize it till the end that you've been going on this journey, the audience. I think it's, you know, they did that very well in the original production. And we had to rearrange things a little bit because we had different songs and the order had to be different and things. But we tried to stick to that original template.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. And do you guys hear it too? You're listening to these songs a zillion times. You must be hearing kind of new things in them from night to night.
Yeah. I mean, after you.
No.
We agree. Yeah.
It's also, you know, we're back in the, I mean, especially the boys don't have a ton of breaks.
Yeah.
So they're usually singing everything. So they're probably not noticing it as much. But, and also, you know, the girls are in the dressing room and we only sort of hear it on the monitor and we're usually talking about other stuff. We're only talking about the show, only talking about our characters.
It's also the magic of Sunny, you know, with some of the arrangements too of the songs. Like, which song is it's Not Loving You with John and Emma?
Love Me Don't.
Love Me Don't. Yeah. It's a different arrangement and it's so beautiful, you know, with all of the different harmonies and you guys can attest to that, you know, but it's just, yeah.
I was saying to Dwayne before you arrived that I was like very concerned about him hydrating because of the amount of sweat I see on the stage. And I was like, Alicia really has it made. She comes out, she like belts and brings the house down, and then she kind of swans off and like,
don't break a sweat.
We see her again in a little while.
Don't break a sweat. Yeah.
I want to be Alicia.
I'm sure you're working hard. But.
I mean, vocally, it's not easy, physically, that's why I have to go work out every day because they don't have to work out every day because they do it 8 times a week. That's their workout.
I like listening to you too. I was like, I hope her vocal cords are getting a big rest in between shows. Like, it's, you come out and.
Well, weirdly, it's almost like if I had my druthers, I would actually put our, I mean, probably you guys would hate this, but I would put our matinee and our evening show, you know, really close together because as a singer, you want to just stay warm.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, especially on Saturdays, you know, when we have a big break in between, you want to kind of nap or you let your voice warm down and then you have to rewarm it back up again. And it's almost harder in the second show. Whereas like if the shows were at 5 and 8, you'd just be like, yeah, just like bang it out, you know?
Do you have a specific warm up you do for this show?
I'm always from the camp that I'm primarily known as a belter, I would say. And I don't like to warm up my belt too much because it just sort of fatigues it, I think, more. So I mostly just do a lot of like trills and just like making sure I'm open and, you know, bigger up there. But I'm not a huge warmy uppy person. Uh-huh. I do a small one before every show, but it's just to make sure that I basically the juices are flowing and it's up there.
Right.
But the nice thing about my show is that the show, the first half of the show is my warm up because all of my solos are in the second half.
Yeah.
So I really do get to spend the literal first half of, I mean, besides Kansas City, the first half of the show is a warm up for me. Yeah. So I've been very blessed.
very kind of whoever arranged that.
That's why I want to be Alicia.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't like that originally, though. I did have more trouble was like up at the front
right?
when we were first rehearsing it. But then the way all the chips fell once we, you know, went through previews and it just kind of worked out that all my stuff was in the second half.
But you're such a beautiful storyteller and an amazing singer. All you have to do is stand there.
Well, I don't know about that, but thank you.
It's true.
In all sincerity, it's the truth.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would agree. Well, I know you're not performing, Josh, but you may answer this question as well. You get to sing so many great songs. I was curious if you have a favorite to perform every night and something that is still like the most challenging for you every night.
For me, my favorite song is Smokey Joe's Cafe. And because Kyle Taylor Parker, just another beast of a singer. Yeah, like just amazing. And Dionne's a fabulous dancer. And that song, she reminds me of Josephine Baker. Mm. You know, and so, and I get to play the chef and be this character in the song. And
you're
it's just
Smokey Joe.
Yeah, well, I'm Smokey Joe. That's right, y'all. Yeah. I'm Smokey Joe.
Yeah.
That's right. so it just has a little bit of everything in that particular number. My second favorite, I would probably say Loving You, the a cappella number. It's the hardest one for me because of the numbers are so back to back. And it's an a cappella number. So, that's the most challenging for me.
He tried to get me to make it shorter.
Yeah. I was like, I can't breathe, Josh. Can you make it shorter? Yeah.
Well, that's what's it's funny that you bring up Smokey Joe's. That's one of my favorite numbers in the show also. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is, because it's the namesake of the show, it wasn't in the original.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, wacky.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So I'm so glad it's in ours because it makes more sense because that's the name of the show, but also because it's such a fun, funny, like it's such a great number. It's one of my favorites for sure. I'd say that and Spanish Harlem are my two favorites that I'm not in. And I mean, I think my favorite's Pearl, but I do love Trouble. It's just really fun. And I get to like have fun with the audience and do some sort of like call and responses. But that's probably the most challenging just because it's the most vocal. It's the biggest workout. It's the biggest pyrotechnic that I have to do.
What was most fun to work on for you?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one.
That's
a tough one. You know, I really like them all. I don't know that I can pick a favorite number in the show. I don't think I can. I feel so attached to all of them. You know,
probably changes from...
Yeah, we'll cover our ears.
I think it probably does, yeah. But, I mean, you know, and I know, you know, there's this point where we were trying to get the show shorter and, you know, we were talking about, well, what we, you know, we can cut a couple songs, and I couldn't figure out a song that we could cut that I wouldn't like cry at night, you know, every night I saw the show missing that song. So luckily we never had to do that.
You'd cry at Along Came Jones Got Cut.
That's everybody's favorite. That's everybody's favorite.
Well, it's like, that's like a good reminder, as was Smokey Joe's Cafe, that like a lot of these songs are very funny. Like there's a lot of humor in them, and Trouble too. I mean, people laugh as you're singing at certain lines. Like it's funny to think of humor in pop music is like not such a prevalent thing anymore. If you think about it,
which I think is what makes our show so inherently theatrical, is that we've, you know, it's like I said, they're little short stories and we're all actors at the end of the day, you know, performing these songs. So it would make sense to infuse them with humor and
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that I was just reading this New York Times discussion with their critics about jukebox musicals, and very nice words for your show. And I think that it's interesting that this particular production seems to have kind of opened up this new discussion about what a jukebox musical is and whether this format, as we were kind of saying before, might actually be a better way to approach bringing a singer or a performer's catalog into shows. I know that you were kind of saying you think it might be better, but do you guys think that there are big advantages to approaching it this way?
Yeah, I do. I sometimes I feel like it really depends on who's working on the project to bring it
of
to
course.
Life.
Yeah.
You know, like, I probably shouldn't say that. But I think that it really depends on the artist, you know, like that's trying to be covered in the particular show. You know, like, it's important to keep the music and the storyline truthful, but also, you know, make it honest and sincere. Does that make sense?
No, completely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one thing about this show is it's a review of writers, not an artist.
Sure,
the writers who wrote a wide range of styles of music, and I think that's what makes it so successful. When sometimes if you pick just an artist, a lot of it is going to sound similar. So you have to you'll have to find different ways and reasons to change up the sound. Mm-hmm.
But I think what I was trying to say earlier is like when Mike Stoller came in to, you know, give us feedback and advice, you know, he gave Josh the freedom to give us the freedom to figure out what works for us. You know, that's not always the case, you know. So in trying to create another jukebox musical, you would want that freedom, you know, from mm-hmm. all perspectives so that you can really deliver a product that feels authentic and honest in that way, mm-hmm. you know, not so force-fed.
Yeah, just it doesn't have to be shoehorned in to be like, wow, we have to include this song because it's one of their biggest hits.
Right.
And so how are we going to get this in the plot somehow? And then sometimes it's like the song will come in a jukebox musical and everyone sort of starts laughing because it's like, oh, that's how they managed to get this song in. You know what I mean? Whereas this,
exactly.
It's like, no,
yeah.
Every song is...
keep all the examples in my
yeah.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about. Yes. But I mean, in this, it's like every song is its own event. So, yeah. Yeah, maybe in a weird way, like reviews, you know, standalone reviews like this and like the one I was just talking about before the podcast are maybe the new jukebox musical with the way they were initially intended to be. Ain't Misbehavin', like those types of shows. They're sort of a tone. I was in American Idiot, and like while that did have a plot, every song, it was more like a music video. I feel like every song was a music video. And it told a story and it did go on a journey, but it was somewhere like a hybrid between What We Do and then a classic book jukebox musical.
Right.
And I think that was more successful too, when every song can be its own thing and its own tone.
And that album was kind of written ripe for that.
Yeah.
It was really ripe for that. They had
it was like
one,
a rock opera.
One thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just going to say I was a big American Idiot fan, and it was because it was like a concept album to begin with that it on its own felt coherent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the story was almost beside the point because there was so much story in the songs themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I walked out of your show saying, like, dude, why aren't there more musical reviews? So hopefully everyone will keep loving it.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're doing your part by having us here. So
I really
appreciate it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks, you guys.
Awesome.
Thank you.
They say that I won't last too long on Broadway.
Smokey Joe's Cafe is playing at Stage 42 in New York right now. If you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, please give us nice reviews and stars on iTunes, although we're on many other platforms right now, including Spotify and Google Play. If you would like to tweet about the podcast or even retweet the stories that I post about it, please use my handle at Rebecca Milzoff and hashtag Billboard on Broadway. You can find me on Instagram at YaDownWithRMM, and I'll be back for a new episode next week.
Blah, 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 blah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.